Now I can't bail on the government.
Okay. Thank you, Isaac. Rabbi Isaac Shulman is the rabbinic intern of Rinat to give us a shiur on the parsha. I look forward, and we all look forward to hearing his Torah. Bakasha.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Freeman, for asking me to speak. So, I'm going to speak a little bit about Chukas HaKam, Chukas HaGayim. The Isser in the Torah that comes up in this week's parsha to copy or to act in the same ways that that non-Jewish nations act. I think this is a particular struggle for most Jews living in a modern Orthodox community. We generally seamlessly integrate with the world around us. We hold the same jobs as everyone else. We wear the same clothing. We look the same. We act the same. I think this is a particularly, sensitive isser that comes up in the Torah in this week's parsha, specifically for modern Orthodox Jews. So, the game plan for tonight is to spend a little time first trying to get our bearings a little bit, trying to figure out what's included in the isser, what types of activities, which non-Jewish nations are included in the prohibition, other matters related to the general scope of the prohibition, and then hopefully to go from there to discuss why does the Torah in fact asur chukas hakam? Why does the Torah come along and prohibit chukas hakam? Okay, so that's going to be the overall game plan. So let's first start with the pasuk in the Torah. I don't want to read. Pasukim en ha'chremos. Okay, so the Torah sets up that the actions of the Egyptian people and of the Canaanite people you shouldn't do and you shouldn't walk in their ways. Okay, so just already to note that the context of the prohibition of Chukos and Los Elichu is specifically said for Mitzrayim and for Canaan. Okay, so something to hold in your minds for slightly later. Okay, so what types of activities are included? So if you look at the Sifri, the third source, after the one, the Sifri says in the second paragraph, "Pen tedrosh le'lohayhem le'mor, shelo tomar ho'yo v'hem yotzim b'tena afani etzei b'tena ho'yo v'hem yotzim b'argaman afani etzei b'argaman ho'yo v'hem yotzim b'tulsin afani etzei b'tulsin v'asek ein gamani." You shouldn't say that since they're wearing certain articles of clothing, that I too am going to go out and wear certain articles of clothing. Okay, the truth is I actually don't know the particulars of what these articles of clothing are, but there are certain articles of clothing that was very common for non-Jewish nations to wear, and the Sifri is saying that you can't say, just like they're wearing these articles of clothing, so too I'm going to wear these articles of clothing. So the first thing that the Isser of Chukas Goyim applies to is the types of clothing that we wear.
What's the head to Drosh?
Lest you seek out. The Sifri is quoting a different drasha for the same Isra of Chukas HaKam. It's on a pasuk in later on Pentena, like Pentena Kesh.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Pashtus of the pasuk is because the next pasuk is Kodei Kasim, that's where Sifri is going to. So the pasuk itself, in both of the book and Gimel and Aleph, emphasize laws, it's hard to transmit that, to transfer that to clothing.
Okay, fair point. Yeah. So.
Ma'aseh would be the clothing.
Right. Okay. But.
Okay.
I think at the very least you're raising an interesting point that it is not intuitive that you necessarily move from their doctrine to their culture and to their clothing. Yeah. Okay. Good. So the first thing is clothing. If you look at the second page, the Gemara and so the top source on the page. Says Misaper Kumi Hareza Midarchei HaEmori. So Misaper Kumi is the top of the second page. So doing some sort of haircut is considered going after the ways of the Emori. Okay, the Torah's Kohanim, the next source also has something very similar. So if you look at the Rambam in the third source on this page, in Hilchos Avod Zara, so the Rambam explains what's going on here. What are these haircuts that are asur? Someone want to read?
Oh
man, sorry, the Makor's kind of stuck a little bit. Okay, so the first thing that's also is. Yeah, it seems like it's a mohawk. Yeah, it seems to be like shaving around the sides of your head and like leaving up, adding the sa'ar, right? The hair.
Sa'ar, right? Is
it? Yeah, so like leaving the middle of your hair like in place.
Oh, it's two sticks, two separate words.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I guess they got a little worse.
Oh,
okay, so does anyone have any idea what that is? Okay, so I'm not 100% sure what it is, to be very honest. I think what he might be saying is to like leave all the hair around the side of your head and like shave the top of your head, which is like kind of like what I guess like
the opposite. He used to like put a bowl in it and then shave around so it just had like a top
just like that,
and it was shaved all the way around.
That's what I thought it was. I thought it was like a monk haircut.
Like a monk,
yeah, that's what I thought it was, but I don't know. It's a little hard. It's a little hard to read into the words, but
the question is, what is more of the custom?
Right.
Right. And so,
yeah, it's a good question. So either way, the Rambam thinks that there's two different types of haircuts that were chukas hagoyim. Right, either like leaving a mohawk or doing something else where like you're shaving something in the middle or something around the sides and like leaving something in the middle. If you look at the Ravid, the fifth source on this page, the Ravid photocopy source. If you look at the third line at the end of the line, Ve'ikar. Someone else want to read? Don't all jump at once. Okay, I'll read. Ve'ikar ha'beluris. Who asher megadin asaseir la'acharav, oso kizanav, the godel oso kimin sharsheres. So the Ravid thinks that what's going on here, the chukas hagoyim for the haircut, is like having a ponytail. Right? It's like letting your hair go back long in the back and like having a ponytail like that. Okay? So far we have clothing. Certain clothing is restricted based on what non-Jews wear, and certain haircuts are restricted. Okay, moving on. Look at the third page. So the third page in the section Titrios, so there's a third concept that comes up. The Torah's Kohanim brings up this idea. Okay, so what are these things? So if you look at the next verse, the Rambam says, "V'lo yivne mekomos kibinyan hechalos shel akum." So the Rambam says you're not allowed to build structures. You're not allowed to build like communal structures that are like the same design, the same like interior design, exterior design that the non-Jews use for their communal gathering places. Okay, so very interesting Rambam. If you look, the Rambam seems to contradict himself. If you look at the next verse, the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos, in Lo Ta'aseh Mitzvah Lamed, the Rambam says. Someone want to read? Solomon, want to read? You got it. It's two words. Vikarkarsios, Vikarstarios, okay. Yeah, so the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos says that what the Isser here is telling you is you can't build services, you can't build structures that were used for their services. Right? So if they have like a church and they have like a certain design for like how they build churches, you can't build your structures to be like mimicking their churches. Right? So whereas the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah in Hilchos Avodah Zarah seems to make it an Isser to build structures that are similar to their communal structures, let's say their public libraries or I guess Tara was mentioning the Colosseum before, something like that, like to like build some sort of like a theater or something along those lines. In Sefer HaMitzvot, the Rambam seems to limit the Isser much more directly to things that were used in the context of Avodah Zarah.
You don't really think they're both exclusive and not complementing?
Well, I think that at the very least, the Rambam in Mishnah Torah is way more mechudash than the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvot, right? If you limit the thing to Bate Avodah Zarah, right, that's way less expansive than if you include any types of communal structures. And so I think if you're going to include communal structures, you'd expect them to say that.
There's a fundamental question which I'm addressing, and that is that, is this an absolute, is it absolute, or is it relative to the period or the time?
Okay, great.
Because
yeah.
These things change.
Great. So we are going to see something like that.
Are they saying that these are absolute rules, or for that particular time it was the custom we're going to do such and such, and therefore, that's a fundamental point about this.
Yes, I agree with you very much. If you look at page 5, we'll just do it right now because why not? So if you look at page 5, right in the middle of the page, right, the Bach, right, I have the Bach and Simon Kofayintes. Would you like to read right after the underline part? That seems counterintuitive. Yeah, the Bach. Let me call my right after the underline part, like after the ellipsis.
Right after the
line. Yeah. I think it's Perek Bameh.
Oh, what is it?
Perek Bameh Isha.
Perek Bameh Isha. They sent the Shabbos. Uviyasa Makomos. Tavo Isha Im. Agoyim Nohagim. Achsho Bohem. Mitzas Makomos. Also Israel. Lenoi Bohem. The Kayman Shekvar Vaya Kavua. Chok Zeh. The Shem.
Yeah. So the Bach comes down very decidedly on your question, and he says that even though the non-Jews are not currently behaving in the same way, the things that were usher at the time of the Chachamim are still usher nowadays. Right? Since it was once part of their practice, it still remains usher today.
But he doesn't address what their practice today, whether that's usher also.
Well, I mean, that actually is the underlying part. That seems to be more universally agreed upon. We'll see at the end of the shir. There's one shita that thinks that it was restricted to the things at the time of the Torah, but almost everyone else thinks that everything that the non-Jews continue to practice throughout generations becomes usher through Chukas HaGoyim.
Even if they stop practicing.
Oh, that's what you mean. You mean something that was adopted later?
Yeah, I mean today you're not going to find people with
Right. That's an interesting question. I guess the question is, why exactly would you distinguish? Meaning, why does it matter whether it was 3,000 years ago that they started doing this, or whether it was 1,000 years ago?
Yeah. Right.
Right. So I wouldn't imagine any distinction between those. I would think that if things, even once they fall out of practice, are still usher from the time of the Beis HaMikdash, then things from the medieval times that fall out of practice are still usher also.
Then which means that over time it's going to become cumulative.
Yeah.
You're going to keep adding to it what the things that were usher over.
Right. Torah gets harder over time.
Yeah. You're going to accumulate, it's like homers that you accumulate.
You soon have nothing to wear.
Right.
What the dress was at the time.
Right.
So today, no one's dressing like that.
Right, that's true.
We're not dressing like the Egyptians did back, whatever. We have a pretty different set of criteria today.
Right.
About dress,
right? Yeah, definitely hear that.
Intuitively, you would think that if they're practicing something today, then today you shouldn't be, you need to distinguish yourself.
Right. Okay, so if you look at the...
Because they practice something or they hit something...
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I definitely agree with you. If you look at the next source, the Minchas Chinuch, he basically says exactly that. So he says, V'nirli Pashat, D'mutar li Yisrael leilich b'malbushin ha-kodmin asher ha'akam azvu ata. It's obvious that a Jew is allowed to wear the clothing that non-Jews used to wear since they abandon that type of clothing nowadays. Kevan she'Yisrael nikar b'malbushav. Since now, that clothing would make the Jew distinguished, recognizable. The Gami Tadasvara nearly does that tell you the whole Medina Medina shlo yehe levusha bebegadim kederach sha'akam b'nei Medina lovshin. It depends on the time and the location, right? Whatever the non-Jews are wearing, the Jew has to be distinguished from the non-Jew.
Yeah, because what the Hasidim, for example, today is what they is what going for 100 years ago, 150 years ago, but today is not rough because they don't wear that.
Here I was thinking that the modern Orthodox community might have a problem with Lukas Akum, but you're saying it's the Hasidic community.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Very good. So I do agree that the Minchas Minach has the more intuitive view on this matter. Yeah. Okay. So just to finish up the discussion of what activities are included. So if you go back to page 3, so what we saw so far was that certain types of clothing, certain types of haircuts, and certain types of buildings, either buildings that were used for Avodah Zarah or communal structures, will be included in the Isser of Lukas Akum. So if you look, 1/4 application of this, so the Smag in his mitzvos, in his Sefer HaMitzvos, in Lo Taseh Mitzvah Lamed, so the Smag adds, so he quotes like very similar language to everyone else that's discussing this, bottom of page 3, look at the second line in the Smag, right at the end of the line, Hakol Be'inyan Echad Hu. So he says everything is like a similar theme that we're going for. Hakol Be'inyan Echad Hu. Mazir Sheyehe Yisrael Muvdali Min HaGoyim, that Bnei Yisrael should be distinguished from non-Jews. B'malbush B'minhag B'dibor. So he says that you should be distinguished with clothing, with practice, and with speech. So he adds speech here, right? He adds that the language you use should be distinguished from non-Jews. Right, so a fourth element here of what we're adding on to the types of things that can become usher. Okay. So it's not 100% clear what he means. I think there is like a large discussion, like in later postgame, about exactly what it means. I don't think it means Hebrew. It could be like definitely a lot of people will focus on like inappropriate language. That could definitely be a big part of it. But it's not 100% clear exactly what it means. I think some people do interpret it as like a distinct like actual language. Like I think that is like one of the reasons why some communities like hold on to Yiddish. Like they think it's like important to like have your own language, like not have the same language as like the nations surrounding you.
That was what distinguished the Jews in Israel. Was language.
Yeah.
I think names.
Names, language, and clothing.
Names
clothing.
Clothing.
Right. Clothing. Yeah. Right. Shalosh Yiddish. Yeah. Oh, yeah, names, language, and clothing, yeah.
But
exactly.
So
I actually did not include that in the list, but there are a lot of posts that discuss about not having non-Jewish names. Like, they talk about how it might be okay to have a translated biblical name, but it might not be okay to use the same names that, like, that non-Jewish people use. So, like, I guess my name would be okay, like Isaac, it's like a translation of Yitzchak, but I guess, I don't know. Chris.
Howie.
So that might be included.
No, but you see, I once read something like the name Alex, like Alexander, from Alexander the Great, caused so many Jews ended up being named Alexander at some point it becomes a Jewish name too.
Yeah, so there is like an interesting like paradox with that some things can become. Like some things can start out also and then become mutter because all the Jews start doing it.
What about the other way around? Can something be fine and then if all the goyim kind of take that?
So I was actually planning on skipping this just because we don't have so much time. But if you look at the 11th page. So I'll read the Magen Avraham. Okay, Nalagin Laha Midi Lanos Beis HaKnesses Ubatim. So the Magen Avraham quotes a minhag to put up trees in shuls and in houses on Shavuos. V'nir li atam she has kiru Shabbat Seres nidonin al peres ha'ilan v'yisbalu alayhem. Okay, and then he says the reason is because like since we're judged for the fruits then, so we should daven for the fruits. So he quotes this minhag to put up the trees. So the Chai Adam, the next source there. So, the Chayyadim quotes the Gra. A Gra bital minhag milahamidi lanos ba'atzeres. So the Gra came along, and he got rid of that minhag to put up trees in shul on Shavuos. Mishum she'achshav hu chok ha'amim lahamidi lanos b'chag shalahem. Since the Christians started using trees for Christmas, so the Gra got rid of the minhag from the shuls to put up trees on Shavuos. Right, so it seems like the Gra thinks that even though the Jewish practice preceded the non-Jewish practice, it can still become usher later in time.
So let's say non-Jews started reading from the Torah. Would you just get rid of it?
Okay, so that's like a that's the next section actually, like right after this. where we did, where like the, I don't want to go through this stuff right now, but the Gemara, the, there is a.
Where you want to have it, and that's spreading. What is it called?
Prostrating.
What?
Like prostration.
Right. Because the gun,
right.
Dealing, for example.
Right. Yeah.
We could not stop the dealing.
Yeah, and a lot of people point out that matzevos, like individual mizbeachs, that like people used to sacrifice on, used to be like fine, and like the avos used to do it all the time. And like they explain that like since it became like a practice of avodah zarah, the Torah ossered it later on. So like since it became like a chugas akum, so like it becomes osser.
Right.
Yeah. So similar idea.
Did that answer the question?
Yeah. But in terms of like mitzvahs that are commanded in the Torah, so like the next section discusses like about it specifically discusses like whether like we have to like change the way we like do hariga bevezdin, like if a bezdin is like killing someone for a capital punishment. Do they need to adopt the way that they do that in order to like not do it the same way as like non-Jews? Like whether it's like even if it's like written in the Torah to do a specific action for your hariga, do you need to change that in order to like not do the same thing that the non-Jews do?
A contrary example, I suppose, but with reason, was when we had multiple wives, and the reason why we stopped that, if I recall correctly, is because the guy wouldn't do it.
I never heard that.
No.
I mean, it could definitely could be, but I never heard that was the reason.
What was the reason?
I think the way I've always heard Romano Gershom quoted is that it's like lehishva isha leish, that it's like supposed to like make the woman like equal to man in halacha. That's why like we can't marry more than one woman, and that's why you can't forcibly divorce her. But it could be that that's a different reason quoted. Okay. All right. So we are running out of time. So let's just quickly discuss one more question. So first we discuss like the different types of things that are included in the Isser.
Right.
Yeah, I got it. So we discuss the different types of things that are included in the Isser. So clothing, haircuts, buildings, maybe speech. Came up with some other interesting questions along the way. So I want to just discuss one more question before going to the reason why the Torah would come along and answer this rule. Why would the Torah come along and give this mitzvah? So if you look at the eighth page, before we do that, I want to do one more question. So if you look at the eighth page, so which types of goyim are included in this Isser? Seems like a pretty fair question to ask. If the Torah says...
I said they need to look at the first page. Rambam says...
Got
it.
Oh, exactly. Yes. Yeah. Good. So, Dr. Freeman, would you like to read the Urayim, since he also makes your diak?
Urayim.
At the top of the eighth page.
From the beginning, Los Asuki Ba'asem, Hussein Los Aleichem. Mirasa Mechacha Velotulet Chukos Kadayim. Los Asem, Kama'asem Shal Shiva Gomos. The Siv Paparsha Leila Mishpat. The Viacha Leila Mori Vchula. Ksiv Basrei, it says later, Los Aser, Kim Ma Aseya. Ksiv Pasha Achremos, Kim Ma Aseya, Eretz Kisvam, Shri Shabbat, Los Asum, Eretz Kanaim, Shri Nivri, Eretz Kam, Shama, Los Asil. Ksiv Lepev Kasher, is here, I'm cousin, Alma Aser, Shiva Umos, Fukoseyem, Kach Israel, Mas Mitzrayim, Fukoseyem, Shabbuksh, Zem, Zem, Ksiv Kuk, Ma Aseya, Eretz Kanaim, Los Aser, Ukim, Aseya, Eretz Kanaim.
Good. So the Urayim comes out very decidedly that we're going to limit the scope of the Isser to specifically the nations that are mentioned in the Psukim, right? That's the Sheva Umos, right? The Chiv and the Usi and Mitzrayim. So that's all that's included in the Isser. Okay. We'll come back a little bit later to suggest an explanation for why this might be. Okay. Maybe a little more broad. So the Chinuch in Mitzvah Reish Lamech Beis says shalol lachas bechukos agayim, shalol lachas bechukos amori v'chem bechukos agayim. Shnamar v'losel lachu bechukos agay asher ani mishalach mepneichem. So don't walk in the ways of the goyim. V'hu hadin l'chol shar hagayim. So the Chinuch first seems to say that any nations are included, any goyim are included. Ki ha'inyan mipnei shehim sari me'acharei Hashem v'ovdim avodah zarah. Why? Why can't you do the actions of any other nations? Because they deviate from Hashem and they worship idolatry. Right, so it seems to be a little bit of a tension going on between those two statements of the Chinuch. Right, the first one is that he says that it applies to any nation, any non-Jewish nations. The second one, he says that the reason why it applies to any non-Jewish nations is because they're over the Avodah Zarah. Right, so the obvious question is, what happens if there's a non-Jewish nation that's not Obed Avodah Zarah? Right, so the chinuch seems to be a little open to that question. Not open to that question is the next source, the Avodas HaMelech on the Rambam, we're not going to read it inside, he just says explicitly that it applies to all non-Jews. It doesn't matter whether they're Obed Avodah Zarah, whether they're not, any non-Jewish nation, you can't copy their actions. That's what the Avodas HaMelech says. Okay, so the nafka mina of these two questions of these latter two opinions would be Muslims, right? Because Muslims are not of the Avodah Zarah; they believe in monotheism. So, would it be usher to copy the practices of Muslims? Okay, so let's skip the Rashba for now. So the Rivash has a tshuva where he's asked about practice of during Shiva going to visit the cemetery. And he wonders whether that's okay or not. He has like a long discussion about whether it's even halachically okay to leave your house while you're sitting Shiva. But then he says at the end of his tshuva, this is the last verse on page 8, the underlined part. Tshuva dot dot dot. Ve'im ipnei she'osim ken ha'yishma'elim. And if you want to say that the fact that the Muslims do it should make it a problem, don't think that. Ein zu chuka shehei asher mishum v'chuka sayim lo seilechil. It's not considered a chok that would be asher because of chugos ayam lo seilechu. Kedamrina and perakamet avodah zarah sorfen al malachim ve'emu mishum darchei amori. Because the Gemara of avodah zarah says that you're allowed to burn the property of a king that died, and it's not considered chugas agoyim. U'mefarish asam disreifal av chuka hi elach hashivusa. Why? Why is it not considered chugas agoyim, even though the non-Jews actually also do the same practice of burning the king's property? Because that's not considered a chok. It's not considered a baseless act. It's considered an act of honor for the king. Even though the Ovdei Avodah Zarah also do the specific action in question, since they do it for a very specific reason, that's not chukas hagoyim. Right? So since they burn the king's property for the sake of kavod, for the sake of honor to the king, that's not considered chukas hagoyim. She'im banu lomar kein, if we were to say that was chukas hagoyim, nasar ha'hesped, b'nei she'ovei kachavim gam ke maspidim, then we'd have to prohibit eulogies, since non-Jews also eulogize. Right, so we can't asur everything, it has to be things that have no reason for what they're doing. Right, so the Rivash is arguing that certain things won't be included in chukas hagoyim because they have some sort of intuitive rationale for why we do them. Okay, just to finish the point for 1 second. So the assumption for the Rivash is that Muslims would be included in the Isra of Chukas Akam. Right? He's arguing that this specific action isn't subject to Chukas Akam because this action is something that has some reason, some rhyme and reason. Right? But the very fact that they're Muslims wouldn't be justification for saying that it's not Chukas Akam.
Well, you'd have to know more, which I don't. But they... what he gives tshuvas, does he usually say, and in addition, I'm giving you
the Rivash is the king of writing everything.
He would have given two reasons. He would have said, 100%. They are, one is they're not, and two is because it's a good act. That makes sense.
Okay. Yeah.
So the fact that he didn't include it.
Yeah, it's a fair point, but I would think that the Rivash would tend to do that.
So this qualification of the Rivash seems to, like, kind of go against what the other rabbi did, took away the trees in his shul, when the Christians started doing it also. There wasn't a baseless act for the reason that he did it. It was a ceremonial thing.
So I would tend to agree with you. The only thing you might say is that there could be a distinction between non-Jewish practices that are done generally and non-Jewish practices that are done for the sake of idolatry.
Okay,
so things that are done for like the sake of ritual service, if they're idolaters, would be considered doing it for idolatry. And then even if there's a rhyme and reason, we might still have to distinguish ourselves from those types of things.
Got it. As opposed to this action, which was not for an idolatry sort of reason.
Exactly.
But do we know why Christmas trees got made?
I'm sure the world knows, but I have no idea.
Yeah, but maybe who knows?
I have no idea.
It's a German custom back.
Okay.
To do with winter and... It all goes back to pagan anyway. All of our rituals.
Maybe it's just pretty. And it's just
lights. Hanukkah in some ways.
Do you have a question?
No.
Okay. Okay, so that's the Rivash in terms of Muslims. If you look at the next source, top of page 9, which is the Tashbates. So the Tashbetz is discussing shaving. And he's trying to figure out whether it's usur or not, because of Chukas Akum.
Right.
The top of page 9. So if you look at the bolded underlined part, so v'alfa pisha lo hayu osin ze el l'shem avodah zarah k'mo shapir shrashi v'sota. So even though the original thing was only usur because of avodah zarah, v'uma zu eina ovedas avodah zarah, and this nation, the Muslims, are not worshippers of idolatry, so you can't apply that, the rationale that the Gemara gave in Bava Kamma, whatever. His point is just that you might think to say that it's mutter because Muslims are not of the Avodah Zarah, so you can't be considered Chukas Akum. What's his rejection of that entertainment? Mikol makom re'uyim Yisrael haksherim lehisrachek mehem v'yiyu nachrim b'taglu chuseyem v'chol ro'ayim yakirim kihim zarah barach Hashem. So he says it's still proper for the Jewish nation to not shave and to remain recognizable by the fact that they have beards. Okay, so that's his argument. So if you would ask me, I would say that if you think that copying Muslims is Chukas Akum, you wouldn't say that it's proper for good Jews to not do that. I think you would just say it's Chukas Akum, you can't do it. Right, so I think the fact that he like goes with this roundabout argument of like, even though it's not Chukas Akum because they're not of the Avodah Zarah, nonetheless, it's good not to copy them anyway. It's good to have this distinction of Jews walking around looking different than the Muslims. Good? So it seems to be the machlokas whether we would include non-idolaters in the Isra of Chukas Akum. Okay, meaning even once you reject the Urayim that it limits it to the Sheva Umos and Mitzrayim, do you expand it to all non-Jews or to only idolaters? With the Tashbetz seeming to limit it to idolaters and the Rivash seeming to include all non-Jews. Good. Okay, so now let's move to the question of why does the Torah aser Chukas Akum in the first place? What's the Torah coming along? What's the rationale that underlies the reason that underlies the din of Chukas Akum? So if you look at page six. So just to like give a little header here for like the different reasons. So there's a few reasons that are suggested like in the Mefarshim. I kind of want to categorize them into two broad approaches. Then there's like a third outlier that I'm going to talk about, and then I want to give my own suggestion for a fourth approach. But the two broad approaches that were generally given are as follows. So one of them is to ground the Isser of Chukas Akum in some sort of contemptible actions that non-Jews do. Right, that we don't want to copy their negatively influencing actions because we don't want to become morally corrupt people. That's the first approach. The other approach is to kind of like remain agnostic as to like the moral stature of like their actions, and to argue that really what Chukas Akum is coming along is to create an ideal of like Jewish separatism. That like Jews just shouldn't be conflated with other nations and other religions. I think those are the two broad approaches that are like traditionally suggested. So let's just give a couple of proofs to each of those. So if you look at the first source on page 6, the Me'iri in Sanhedrin, so he says, "Afal pi she'ikar minias halicha b'chukos ovdei ha'alilim eina ela le'inyan shar she'ab o'da zara, shelo yistam alem b'malusheyam ha'miyuchadim lohem u'b'tasporah sa'aram b'shar dvarim ha'miyuchadim l'chom reyhem u'b'binyan heichalos kishalahem ad she'achshav ha'roa alav shehu mishalahem." So the Me'iri says that even though the prohibition of Chukas Akum is really based on Avodah Zarah, and it's really based on not being similar to them in the types of things of worship that they had, nonetheless, the Chachamim came along and added other things onto that. That the Chachamim came along and made things asur mishum Chukas Akum, even though they were not related to Avodah Zarah. Right, so the Me'iri comes very clear that the rationale that underlies the Isra of Chukas Akum is the Isra of Avodah Zarah. That we shouldn't do practices that are similar to theirs because they're rooted in Avodah Zarah.
Originally. That's the original, right. But the Chacham, that wasn't the rationale of the Chacham.
Right, no, not the rationale of the Chacham. Right. Yeah, that's his point. His point is that there's a difference between Midaraisa and Midarabanan in Chukas Akum. Midaraisa, it's only things that are related to Avodah Zarah. Midarabanan, it's include other things.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, a slightly different approach. If you look at the next source, the Gur Aryeh, Maharal, it says, V'nirali, Teba akasu hazel lamid al ma'alasam, she'ein roi lahem ma'asim elu ha'mituavim. That these actions that are prohibited are not fit for Bnei Yisrael, these disgusting actions. Shari timtza ki Hashem Yisparach hotzi yosam eretz Mitzrayim, v'zem ipnei she'ein roi liyosam biyachad she'mitzrayim bi'atzman ba'ali arayos. Uftechsiv kan. Right, so Hashem took us out of Egypt. Why? Because Egypt was like a land of adultery, of incest, of illicit relations. Right, so, and then he says at the end, Ulufikach, the next underlined part, Ulufikach ein roi li Yisrael lasos maisim elu, shadavar zem meruchak mi Yisrael, ve'im osim divarim elu, heim mekalkulim ma'alosam, ve'ein shem Yisrael aleihem. That like, these are disgusting actions, if we would engage in these disgusting actions, we wouldn't even be deserving of the title Yisrael. You wouldn't deserve the Jewish title. Right, so here the Gur Aryeh is clearly rooting the Isser of Klipas Akum in this idea of getting rid of disgusting actions, right, of morally corrupting actions. Good? So both of these approaches, either the Meiri that focuses on the idolatry, or the Maharal that focuses on the contemptible nature of these illicit relations, these are both grounding the Isser of Klipas Akum in the idea that the non-Jews are engaging in some sort of negative actions, right? Presumably, if you're discussing an action that's not contemptible, that's not disgusting, it would be no problem to copy that action, right? There's no ideal of not doing the things because non-Jews are doing them. There's an ideal of not doing things that are like non-Jewish. And when we say non-Jewish, what we mean is disgusting, contemptible, right? That's really what the Torah is coming along and saying here.
So take clothing. How is that?
I mean, so some people do root the Isra of clothing in the Isra of Avodah Zarah. Some people say, like, what we're referring to is the clothing that was used for Avodah Zarah.
And not perhaps their everyday clothing.
Right.
Hence, yeah. Whatever.
Exactly.
Would that still be considered Zarabanah, though?
So maybe, yeah. Definitely the Meiri remains open to having lots of things. Asher Meir Zarabanah.
But the opposite of Jewish behavior is not disgusting.
Right, but right, but no. But the point is that when we say chukas akum, we don't really mean akum. What we mean is chukas, the shiva amim and mitzrayim. And when we say shiva amim and mitzrayim, we mean that these are like morally contemptible people. That's what we really mean. So we don't really mean non-Jews. We really mean these specific people. And we really mean that they're bad actions. Right. That's the idea. Yeah. Okay. I think the problem with this approach generally is that it kind of makes the isra of chukas akum a little bit redundant. Right. Because we already know that these things are usher by themselves. It kind of makes the fact that the Torah comes along and gives a separate Isra Chukas Akum a little bit unnecessary. Okay, so a different approach. If you look at the Rambam on the bottom of page 6. So the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvot, actually you can just skip to the top of page 7. It's the end of that Rambam. The Rambam quotes the whole Isra Chukas Akum. And then he says in the underlying part, Zekulo lehisrachik mehem. The whole point of the Isra is to be separate from them.
It's to like keep away.
Yeah.
Not to be influenced.
Exactly. So it seems to be the idea is that it's not so much that like what they do is good or bad. We don't really care about that. What we care about is that like Jews maintain their separateness from non-Jews. That seems to be the basis for this Isser. Not going to do this inside, but the Ibn Ezra on the previous page suggests that really what the Isser of Klipas Akum is not to do the things that the non-Jews are doing. It's to do the things that the non-Jews are doing in a way that it becomes your routine. Right? So it's not a problem to like do the same things that they're doing, to copy them. The problem is to like make your routine the same as their routine. Right? Like if your daily routine is the same as a non-Jewish daily routine, so then like you've lost like any sense of like independence from like their culture and from their community. Right? So that's the Ibn Ezra's idea. I want to suggest an alternative. I'm skipping the outlier shita that I said that I mentioned earlier. So I want to suggest an alternative that it's not that we're worried that like specific things are bad in the non-Jewish community that we have to try to avoid, and it's not that there's some like ideal of like remaining like totally distinct and separate from the non-Jewish community, but rather what it is that the Torah is coming along and prohibiting chukas akum in order to mandate that we create a rich culture and experience. Like a rich Jewish culture. And now like the point of Chukas Akum is to say, don't derive your culture from non-Jewish culture, create your own rich culture by itself that will sustain the community. So I want to give a few examples of this. So if you look at the Rambam on page 7, Hilchas Avodah Zarah. So the Rambam says, HaKol Be'inyan Echad, who the underlying part here. HaKol Be'inyan Echad, who? Mazir Shelo Yid Melehen. So everything is the same theme. If the Torah comes along and says, don't be similar to them. Ela Yiyah HaYisrael moved al mehen via dua b'malbusho b'shar ma'isav kimoshe who moved al mehen b'ma'da'o b'deosav. That a Jew should be recognizable with his clothing and with his other actions, just like he's recognizable with his ideology. Right? That just like Jews have like a rich sense of like doctrine and beliefs, so too they should have a rich sense of culture, a rich sense of community. That like their clothing should also be unique and distinguished from non-Jews. So I think that's the first idea here, is that the Torah is coming along and it's saying that they're supposed to create that proactive community, that proactive culture that's richer than just your beliefs and your doctrine, that it extends to clothing and other stuff. Another proof to this is the Yeraim, the next source. I'm not going to read inside, but the Yeraim says that the Isra of Pukas Akum is actually not, does not apply to things throughout the generations. It does not apply to practices that non-Jews adopt later in time. It only applies to the specific practices that the Shiva Amin had at the time of the Torah was given. Right, so why would that be? Why would it be that it's only given for the time the Torah was given? So I think what it might be is that clearly it's not an Isser to warn against following bad behavior, because bad behavior can happen in every generation. It's not an ideal of Jewish separatism from like separating yourself from the nations you're living with, because Jews can live among different nations throughout different times. I think instead what's going on is that at the time that like our nation is forming, like we're a newborn nation, at that time when we're forming our culture, we're forming our community, we're forming like the way we're going to live, at that time it's bad to draw on other nations. It's not bad necessarily to draw on practices on other nations throughout time. What's bad is to do it at the time that you're forming your culture, at the time you're forming your nation. Right, once you have that rich culture, once you have that rich community, it's not necessarily a problem to copy a different practice that someone else does, that some other nation does. And then one final proof to this idea. The Tur says that you're not supposed to wear clothing that's similar to them, and you also can't wear clothing that's designated for them. So why does it say both? So the Prisha explains that he has two separate categories. One is that's clothing that's designated for them, some sort of like, let's say, like a priest robe, that you can't wear at all. And then other things, clothing that's similar to them, let's say like t-shirt and shorts, so like that you can wear, but you just can't make it your, yes, Ali, you just can't make it your like permanent clothing, right? You can't make it your like, you can't say like, this is what I'm going to wear every day, all day, right? When you wear your like permanent clothing, that has to be like distinctly Jewish, right? And so he argues that like the difference between like the clothing that you wear like happenstance and the clothing that you wear like permanently. And the clothing that you wear permanently has to be distinctly Jewish. And so I think that in the just to coming back to like the, what we started with, so I think in the modern world we don't have a lot of these externalities that distinguish us from the communities that we live in. I think we look pretty similar. We hold pretty similar jobs. So I think we have to use the mandate of Chukas Akum to be very careful to create alternatives and to have like a rich Jewish culture that like is all encompassing, just like our ideology and doctrine is all encompassing.
Thank you. Next week is Rabbi Gottlieb.